Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. This month, the University of Tulsa and Living Arts of Tulsa will pay tribute to an artist and teacher who has profoundly influenced a generation of artists, both here in Tulsa and beyond. For over 30 years, Tom Manhart taught ceramics at the University of Tulsa, but if you talk to his art students, they'll say he taught them a lot more: how to think and speak critically about their work, to be curious and to experiment with techniques, materials, and find the art-making potential in any object, and to explore art in all of its forms, visually and everything beyond, and to approach art with rigor and an attention to detail in its creation as well as the idea at hand. And that's the way he made his own art. Eloquent Craftsman, Thomas A. Manhart and His Students, is a retrospective of Manhart's work, both as an artist, but also as a teacher. The exhibit at two locations in Tulsa, Living Arts of Tulsa and the Alexander Ho Gallery at the University of Tulsa, will feature Manhart's work over the years, but also feature the work of nearly 40 of his students, a fitting tribute to a man exhibition organizer Steve Liggett called a teacher philosopher. Steve Liggett is the former artistic director of Living Arts of Tulsa. He's joined by another former student, Catherine Ross, a ceramics artist and professor and head of ceramics at the Art Institute of Chicago School. Eloquent Craftsman opens tomorrow at the Ho Gallery and Friday at Living Arts. Both continue through October 26th. Steve and Catherine, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks for inviting me.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, Steve, I guess you really spearheaded this idea of this retrospective to Tom Manhart. What went into that thinking behind putting this show together, these shows together, I should say?
Well, it didn't initially, it wasn't conceived initially as two shows. It was initially one show. And really, my purpose was just to honor my teacher, my mentor. Tom Manhart was a philosopher. He was an amazing teacher. And I waited, actually, many years for someone to do this, and no one did. And I was going to retire, and I decided if it was going to happen, then I had to do it.
Catherine, when Steve approached you about this idea, I mean, what influence did Tom Manhart have on you and your own teaching?
Well, it's been a long time. I finished here in 1980, and when Steve contacted me, which was probably about a year ago, and he explained the project and was asking me for names of people I remembered, because both of our memories are incomplete at this point. So we were going back and forth about it. And so that was a time where I had to remember Tom and what life was like here in school with him as my teacher, because, you know, things are very different nowadays. And Tom was a very tough stickler for skill. I think technical skill, technical knowledge, and craftsmanship, always. And I think that has always carried through in my work and in my teaching, but it's been a big shift for me because my work is installation work, it's mixed media, I use video and I make objects, and sometimes it's fired and sometimes it's not, but everything has to be paid attention to, every little detail. And I got that from Tom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And for you, Steve, in your own work, we think of you as more of a curator, sort of impresario in a way from your time at Living Arts, but you've always done artwork. And what were the takeaways from your experience with Tom?
Well, Tom really emphasized individualism. He really was quite interested in world cultures himself and how they influenced his own work, but he really wanted us to explore who we were and how we communicated that through the medium. And, you know, Kitty started, you know, working, I say Kitty, I know Catherine as Kitty.
Everybody knows me as Kitty, yeah.
She started working with clay and not firing it and mixing other elements into it, and that just blew my mind. I just didn't understand that, but it was her way of looking at clay. And, you know, a lot of students didn't even work with clay. They initially worked with clay with Tom, but then they, in the 80s, now I'm talking about...
A little later.
Later than, than when, like Janice Bawden, you know, I mean, she started working with plastics, and he was totally behind that, and he was totally accepting of that. And I think a lot of what I learned from Tom was the importance of craftsmanship, of course. He was an immaculate craftsman, but he also influenced me in that, you know, if it took something like, you know, sound to be able to work with a piece, then go for it. He was very encouraging in allowing people to explore different things. Although, when my thesis fell over in the kiln and all melted all together, I tried to justify that and say, well, you know, hey, you know, it isn't really what I thought it was going to be. And he said, no way. No way, Liggett.
Start over. Now, when you started using that technique, that was probably something he hadn't ever thought of. What was his reaction to that? Was it,
you know,
or do you
this
remember?
Was in the mid to late 70s, uh-huh. and I was interested in land art and Robert mm-hmm. Smithson and Walter de Maria had just finished The Lightning Field in 1979 to 80. So that's what I was looking at and was influencing me, because clay is a material of the earth. It comes from the ground, and I was interested in using it to refer to that history of it. And Tom certainly understood all of that, and I had the dilemma that I wanted to build large structures with unfired clay, which is extremely fragile, and I needed to put additives in it to give it strength without changing its appearance. And Tom was all for helping me figure out what materials to try and to test. He was very helpful in helping me find interesting local clays. And he knew all the people who mine those clays in the area. So, he was really open to all of that.
Yeah. And it's interesting, there's an example of that sort of work in the Hoag show.
Right.
From that period where it's this cross-section of stratas of earth, right. and these, I guess, the reed structures that come out. And it's very 70s sort of,
yeah,
you know, I mean, it sort of has that ecological sort of, you know, the earth movement sort
but
of
nobody
thing.
Was doing that in this area, you know, Tulsa's kind of about 10 years behind the rest of the world. And it was really important to have someone with that kind of aesthetic like Kitty to come to TU.
Well, the other thing about Tom was he was always experiencing with new, I mean, you know, he was doing fiber at certain points. And I know when I first met him, which was well after I was here as a student, he was like getting into like video and 3D and sort of electronic sort of art. You know, this is even before, you know, installations. I mean, he was starting to do, and at the time it really struck me as I was sort of more of a traditional viewer of art. And it was like, I don't understand that at all.
Well, Tom looked at everything as potential. Uh-huh. material for making his expression. When computers, the personal computer came out, he was one of the first ones to have one and worked with it as a tool. And I asked him one time, I said, you know, what inspires you to make the next body of work? And he said, usually a new tool. And so his glaze calculation and his incredible interest in chemistry and how things could be tweaked just a little bit to make them more what he wanted them to do was a great inspiration on all of us, you know, and that's not taught as much anymore, glaze calculation and being able to the chemistry, you know. Hoag was a big proponent of that. Hoag used to make his students make their own paints and their own charcoal and things like that, and he got that a lot from Alexander.
Was there sort of a line from the way Alexander worked with painting to how Tom worked with ceramics and fiber art and what we call decorative art?
Well, we used to call it that.
Yeah, I know. I mean, craft, whatever you call it now.
I think so. What do you think?
Well, I remember that the art department at TU at that time was small. There was one professor in each area. There mm-hmm. were a couple in painting, but usually it was just one person in each area. But they collaborated with each other all the time. The students, the grad students anyway, because that's, you know, what I'm familiar
with. Yeah, you're from New York.
Yeah. utilized all of the professors. We made our own personal body of work. We talked to all of the professors about it. They talked to each other. So everything was quite collaborative even then.
Now, when you approached artists like Kitty and many of the other artists that studied with Tom, what were the reactions from artists? Because you do have quite a few artists that are going to be showing in this show. Yeah.
Well, I mean, almost unanimously. I mean, I had one artist who just simply couldn't. He was so busy. This is a guy who's building kilns in New York.
Yeah.
And he maintains them in the New York school system. But everyone else was just elated about being asked, first of all, and second of all, honoring Tom by putting a piece in. And really, the concept evolved from just Tom's work to Tom and his students' work. And then I really wanted to kind of juxtapose the idea that this is what they were doing at TU, this is what they've done since then. And so that actually even evolved a little bit further, also with space considerations.
Yeah.
But most people were just really excited about it. Many of them were acquaintances or good friends of mine. So it was a little easier for me to do this than somebody else.
Yeah. So the way it's worked, I guess the Hoag Gallery features work from the 70s and 80s when a lot
80s
of...
80s and 90s.
80s and 90s mm-hmm. when these artists were students, as well as the work of Manhart himself.
Right.
And then the Living Arts has more recent work, right?
Right. The opening at TU is actually the latter part of his work, his students' work from the 80s and 90s, right? And the evolution was really space. You know, the amount of space that it took to be able to properly present the work. Living Arts has a little bigger venue, so we ended up with a larger show over there. But I think that it's a fantastic comparison. The work evolved, as any artist's work evolves, or should evolve, I think. And many times you see, like, huge jumps from... you know, the beginning, like Bill Derriver's piece in the show over at Living Arts. Many people know Bill Derriver's name because he ran the art school at TCC for a long time. But his early work was a simple pot. And so we are going to juxtapose that with what he's building now, these beautiful vases and platters made out of pewter. Yeah. But he still goes back and talks about everything really goes back to Tom's critiques and some of the things that he would talk about, the foot of the pot, the lip of the pot, the belly or the neck of the pot. And so he really gives Tom a lot of credit for what he's doing now.
My guests today are Steve Leggett, the former artistic director of Living Arts at Tulsa, who's going back to Living Arts to curate this exhibit, both at Living Arts as well as the Alexander Hoag Gallery at TU, Eloquent Craftsman, Thomas Manhart and His Students, which opens Thursday at the Hoag Gallery and Friday at Living Arts of Tulsa and will be on display through October 26th. My other guest is one of Tom's students and artist Catherine Ross, who is the head of the ceramics, a professor of art at the Art Institute of Chicago. And she joins us as well and is here for the opening. Now, as Steve mentioned, there are examples of your work when you were here at Tulsa, as well as what you're doing now. What's it like to go back to see that work from 30 odd years back?
Well, I haven't seen it yet. You know, I'll see it today, I think. Uh-huh. But I had a bit of a hard time finding something because my studio had burned down 10 years ago and I lost all of the archive of my work. And I didn't think that there was anything left in Tulsa, but a few people have pieces. Apparently, the department still has one. Mm-hmm. And this one that Craig Kallenberger has, and I think Olivia Hoag has one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all that's left from that time period.
Wow.
So it's going to be interesting to see.
So it's work you haven't seen in an awful long time.
I haven't seen it in 38 years.
Yeah. When you go back to see something you've done as an artist just, you know, 10, 20 years ago, I mean, are you looking at it critically or are you looking at it sort of nostalgically or what?
Both. Probably a little more critically than nostalgically, but both sides are there. I think what comes to mind for me is seeing what I did then and comparing it to this whole three decades afterwards and finding the threads that began in those early pieces and have held true in all of my work and concerns.
Yeah. What's the focus of your work today?
Well, as I said before, I was interested in clay as a material of the earth. I'm still very much involved in those ideas, but now it's also the relationship between those materials and the natural environment and how humans and animals make sense, relate to, and understand objects in their world. And it's a little less technical in some ways, more philosophical, more psychological now, more interested in having a conversation with those situations where questions are posed to me through the work, and then I explore how to answer them.
And that idea of looking at the animal world, I mean, are you using materials that sort of remind us of, I'm looking on your webpage, for example, there was this image of this a mule's hoof.
Yeah. For a while, I was doing research on genetically engineered crop plants for human consumption and livestock, and was just interested in it for my own concerns about health, and started to wonder what was the earliest genetically manipulated livestock animal, and did research on that and found it was the mule, which were developed by the Egyptians about 4,500 years ago. And I thought, man, I can do something with this. But I thought, if I'm really going to do it, I need to live with one of these animals and be totally responsible for it because they're obsolete. There's no purpose for them anymore. They would not occur naturally. So they're here because of us. And I thought, I needed to live with one and thoroughly understand its psychological issues. So I bought the rarest mule in the United States and brought her home. And of course, they're herd animals. They can't live alone. So I had to get her a companion. And they've been my collaborators now for almost 15 years.
Really?
With work. Yeah.
And so it becomes a source of inspiration?
Yeah, it's a source of conversation, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. They originally started living in the studio in one section of it, and they had free roam of the studio. And I did that because I wanted them to be comfortable with these foreign objects, porcelain things, tools, kilns, plaster molds. They could wander in and out and look at everything, and they're very curious, and they have to make sense of things in their world because they have to know if they're safe or not.
No, I've always heard mules are smarter than horses.
They are. Because they're hybrid, they have what's called hybrid vigor. They have all of the positive and negative traits of horses and also of donkeys. Hmm. And they live longer. They can live up to 50 years. They're stronger and they're healthier. And they're a little more difficult to deal with because they don't just do what you ask of them. That they have to agree and have a reason.
Who knew we were going to go in this
direction? I know.
Direction.
Sorry.
That's fantastic.
But it's also, I find it amazing. It sort of becomes a conversation point for how you create your art today.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, Steve, give us a sense of the range of art you're going to see in this show because, I mean, it's sort of a who's who of today's Tulsa artists mm-hmm. because so many people did study with Thomas. Mm-hmm. You get a sense of how Tom Manhart's art changed over his time at the University of Tulsa.
Yeah, you'll see everything from people that were highly influenced by Bernard Leach and Shoshi Hamada that really were kind of the godfathers of the ceramics movement back in the 50s. And people, that aesthetic still is pervasive in much of the vessel-oriented work that is in the show and also in the world. People like Frank Campbell, who are exquisite in their work with celadons and low fire work. You'll see pieces that are wood fired that have a certain aesthetic of like a natural kind of raku type of work that happens in many ways. You see low fire molded pieces like Laurie Spencer's work that she's taken vegetables and been able to make molds from them and then use those parts together and make sound objects and whistles. There you'll see people that have gone on a Fulbright to Peru and have come back with a really amazing knowledge of sound and the kind of hollow, haunting sound that you get from clay instruments. And you'll see, you know, people that have said, I don't want to do clay anymore.
Yeah,
I want
painting.
To do painting.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, or I'm doing
Cynthia
installations.
Brown,
yeah.
Or Olivia Mourinho. So it's a wide variety, and it's been fascinating working with these artists as well as the venues.
Well, one thing when you talk to anybody who studied at the University of Tulsa during Tom Manhart's time here was the Friday critiques, which I was talking with Teresa mm-hmm. Valero, who's a third floor design and the graphic design teacher at the University of Tulsa. And she said as soon as she came to the University of Tulsa, it was like, well, bring in some graphic design. We want to talk about that too. So what are your two memories of the Friday critiques?
Well, I remember they were grad students and undergrads together, and that's very unusual. So it was usually a big group and students at different levels of their learning process, and we would all help each other and talk about each other's work.
Now, when we hear the word critique, we think of it sort of like a defense, could be an adversarial relationship. Was it adversarial, or was it more collegial?
I think the best critiques are not adversarial. That yeah. doesn't do anybody any good. And yeah. These certainly were not. I mean, people would be certainly very honest, but everything was always said with the intent of furthering the knowledge.
Yeah, it was constructive criticism.
Yeah.
As opposed to just hurting someone's feelings.
Right.
And really, it's a university, right? So
yeah.
you should get that. I mean, you're yeah. paying for that, you know, and you don't want to just come in and people say, oh, that's a really nice piece, you know.
That's
you want,
right.
you want to know how to grow.
Right, and you're expected to be able to talk about the work, to defend it, and to make a statement about your concerns in your work, what you're doing with it, how you feel it's succeeding or not succeeding. And if you can't just bring in a piece and say, well, here it is, you tell me what you think. You have to engage in the conversation about your own work as well as others.
Yeah. But he also threw out questions to us to go away and consider and come back.
Right.
The question of, is it the artist's role to actually market their work? Or what's the difference between a decoration and an ornament? And so those kinds of soul-searching and research-based questions really led for discoveries that might not have had a thing to do with what you were making, but then informed what you were making to be able to question as to. He would get through the back door many times. He was also an amazing exaggerator. He would say, that's just, you know, too big to be that bad, you know. Or, you know, you'd get a glazed piece out of the kiln and it would just be like, oh, God, that's so horrible. And he'd say, well, what are the implications of that? You know, and so you would question how to use something, whether or not it worked on that piece or not. Maybe you filed it away in your brain for a future piece.
Yeah. Well, you've had a chance to look at his sort of years of creation as well.
It's been great.
Yeah. What's that experience been like for you?
Oh, it's everything. It's absolutely everything. It's like a detective story in trying to figure out what was in his mind at different parts of his life, you know, and how he evolved from really abstract expressionism in the 50s through the influence of Shoji Hamada and Bernard Leach and his time in Hawaii, and then going through like the whole funk art movement in California and the bright, shiny glazes, and his fascination with decoration that was individualized from the cultural history of ceramics. Like he would take the idea of pat sur pat, which was an old French type of slip trailing technique, and he would use it his own way to create things like the Astro Garden, which was a field of grass in clay that, you know, we still can't find that piece. But there were a lot of really great pieces that we did find. And then he got very interested in terra sigillata and the idea of decanting clay to be able to use just the finest particles, and Maria Martinez types of burnishing clay, and what happens when you polish it rather than burnish it, and what happens if you use Teflon instead of an agate for burnishing the clay. He built his own tools many times in order to really enhance what he was fascinated by.
And then he was doing fiber as well.
He did a lot of fiber.
He did a fiber that combined ceramics and fiber.
His thesis, actually, at TU combined fiber with clay. And the piece that will be in the show that usually hangs at the Performing Arts Center, Espiel, is a beautiful example of how he could go back in the late 70s and create a piece like that that he hadn't made much in fiber since like the early 60s. So he always had, there'll be jewelry of Tom in this show. He was fascinated with metals and how they would, you could do different things with that than you could clay. And again, the implications of what the material would allow was something he was fascinated by.
One of the things I keep hearing from in the takeaway was he always had this curiosity about whatever object he was looking at and says, what does this mean? You know, what is this object about? And it's really a tribute to him that one of the things he did during his life was he curated the Eloquent Object at Philbrook. With Marcia Manhart, who I think is also in the show, too. And this is a show from 20 years ago, almost 20 years ago.
Eloquent Object was mid-'80s.
Mid-'80s, so almost 30 years ago. And this is still an exhibition that people talk about.
Well, it was the only exhibition to that point that Philbrook had ever mounted that toured internationally. Yeah. It went to Tokyo. I mean, this was really, they were at the absolute cusp of the whole debate as to whether or not material made out of traditionally known as craft material could ever be art. And they wanted to kind of put it to rest and say, well, of course it can be. You know, it is a craft if you look at it that way, but so is painting and so is sculpture. So anything has a skill level that can be developed into, it's the idea that makes the difference. You know, and when you say, you know, that about his curiosity, that's what he completed, really, in many ways, through his algorithm series. You know, the algorithm series that will be, we've found, I think, 8 pieces from it, and that's amazing. But people have cherished those pieces and taken really good care of them. And they actually took the idea rather than the object to the furthest, formalist way of looking at what it was to do that. And very hidden, very mysterious, and very analytical, his pieces from that period. And that was the last big series that he did in the late 80s, early 90s. And then after that, he proceeded to make really functional pieces that he could work with and give away as gifts, and also that people could have and use every day. And he had a dual mission. One was the idea-oriented pieces, as well as the very, very functional, very beautiful things that you could surround yourself with.
Kitty and Steve, thanks very much for joining us.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
Steve Liggett is the former Artistic Director of Living Arts of Tulsa. Catherine Ross, a ceramics artist and professor and head of ceramics at the Art Institute of Chicago School. Both are former students of Tom Manhart. And Liggett is the exhibition organizer of Eloquent Craftsman, Thomas A. Manhart and His Students, a retrospective of his work and the work of his students, which opens Thursday afternoon at the Alexander Hogue Gallery on the TU campus and Friday evening for First Friday at Living Arts of Tulsa. Both will be on display through October 26th. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.